Welcome to Hudson Valley Word of Mouth. I'm your host, Julia Jorn, and I live and work in Round Top in beautiful Greene County. Come along with me as I meander through the Hudson Valley, the Northern Catskills, the Capital Region, and beyond to interview the people behind the special spots and hidden gems that make our area of New York State and our collective community both distinct and diverse. You'll likely discover that you don't have to travel too far to pay them a visit. They may already be in your own backyard or just around the corner. And I'll bet their place might turn out to be that one certain destination you keep meaning to check out. So I'm here to remind you, put it on your list. Together we'll meet shop owners and small business owners, curators, designers, and artists, chefs, farmers, and culinary experts, and other creative entrepreneurs. We'll hear their own personal stories, learn about their unique offerings, and hit them up for their own local recommendations. Thanks for listening. Today I'm continuing my conversation with Seth Camel, founder of Big Onion Tours. Now in its 30th year, its walking tours of the Big Apple have attracted everyone from local New York City residents and students to visitors from around the world. Now Big Onion has expanded upstate and over the past few years has hosted walking tours of the city of Hudson. Seth is also the founder of Hudson Valley Rover Tours, which officially kicks off this year. And Seth, I do intend to talk to you about that down the road as well.
Absolutely.
But for now, we've returned to Hudson. Last time we met on the edge of the Hudson River at Promenade Hill, where Seth enlightened me about the city's origins and its founders. And now I'm joining him for a walk along Warren Street, the city's main artery, which is lined with commercial businesses as well as historic houses. There are many stories to be told here, but on my wish list is to get an introduction to the history of alcohol in the area. Seth, where do we begin?
Let me just say that when you have whaling ships, you have sailors. When you have sailors, you have men who've been out to sea for a very long time. When you've been out to sea for a very long time, you tend to have bars, liquor, beer, and for another day, companions for hire. As we dig deeper into the founding proprietors of Hudson, the primary family are the Jenkins, Robert, Thomas, and Seth Jenkins. And anytime you and I talk about the history of Hudson, they're going to come up. Seth Jenkins is really interesting because he was a Quaker, business owner, whaler who didn't like boats. They called him captain. He was a slave owner, and he owned a large rum distillery.
And the rum distillery was here in Hudson?
The rum distillery was here in Hudson. He distilled over 1,000 gallons of rum every year. And it raises an interesting point that when the whaling ships were traveling to the sea, they would go to the Caribbean and bring oak staves, the staves to make barrels. And oak is all over this area at the time. On the way back, you always have room with the whale or whatever else for barrels of rum. Or, in his case, raw molasses.
What did he use that for?
He made his own rum.
With that molasses.
Right. Rum is made from molasses or from sugar cane juice, and raw juice won't transport. So Caribbean molasses, primarily, I believe, coming from Barbados, possibly Jamaica, or a few other islands, made their way up, and he'd distill so much liquor that in the early 1790s, it caught the eye of future President Thomas Jefferson.
How did that happen?
Thomas Jefferson and James Madison in the early 1790s took a road trip, and they spent over a month traveling some 900 miles north of Philadelphia to evaluate the road conditions, town conditions, and spirit of the peoples of what we now call New England. And Jefferson's diary clocked in every single mile, condition of the road, and everything. When he returned, having met with Seth Jenkins and talked to Jenkins about the rum business, the whale oil business, all of these various things, the first letter he wrote upon return of a month plus journey was to Seth Jenkins with a bit of a business proposal.
And what was that?
It was ridiculous. It was proposing that Jenkins no longer use Caribbean molasses that came from British colonies, that instead they use French sweet white wine from Bordeaux, and his son's friend by the name of Mr. Fenwick was the emissary to Bordeaux for the United States and could make a deal. And this is, you know, something that, would get him in trouble if he were president, because that would be a bit of the emoluments clause.
A little bit of politics mixing in with how to make your recipes.
Yeah, you know, it's this whole notion of politics and business mixing didn't start recently.
I don't imagine that it did. So besides that story, what are other stories that catch your attention here in Hudson?
Well, we should go chronologically. So I think the next great one is going to be the beer brewers. And while there are multiple beer brewers here in the city, the most famous one is going to be Cornelius Evans. The only lasting legacy here in Hudson is the Cornelius Evans House, which stands at 412 Warren Street. It's a beautiful, freestanding brick house with a Second Empire mansard roof built in the 1860s, grass on four sides, actually takes up about 3/4 acre. It's probably one of the most photographed houses anywhere on Warren. But this is a family that comes in the 1790s and buys a beer brewery. Father makes beer in a very small scale, brews here in Hudson, yet the beer is distributed through the Tribeca neighborhood in Manhattan. That's where his depot is. His son, Robert, takes the business in the late 1860s to a whole new level when he creates a new recipe called Evans Pale Ale. And this becomes an exceptionally popular beer. The plant expands exponentially. They add facilities, and it just becomes absolutely massive. They lose everything with Prohibition in 1920. Nothing about them. It's a national law. What I love about the story is that if you head up to Albany now, there's a guy named C.H. Evans. His nickname's Neil, who is now brewing the family recipe beer at the brewery in Albany using original local ingredients the same way his family would have over 100 years ago. The sad thing is some company out in California took the copyright for Evans Pale Ale, and he can't name the beer for his family as his relative did in the 1860s.
You're kidding.
No.
Oh, that's not very fair.
Well,
regardless, we need to go up to Albany and check that out.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The beer is wonderful. And he's very friendly. And it's just really great to see the recreation of a family business.
I love that.
The third one takes us out of town just a little bit. And the third one is really about the farmers that surround us. And all around us are apple trees. One of the great things that a apple grower will do is they will store many of those apples, and they'll press many of those apples into cider or applejack, which is a local, I'll call it Northeast moonshine. Raw, it's pretty brutal. But in comes another Philadelphia guy, Legs Diamond, Jack Diamond. He's a city kid. His nickname is Legs because he's a great dancer. And he convinces Dutch Schultz and then Arnold Rothstein, the great like mafia leader of New York City and baseball history, that there's money to be made during Prohibition between Yonkers and Albany, and he's going to lock it down. A lot of longtime residents of the area have very fond memories of how Legs Diamond helped them during the Depression. If you didn't mess with Legs, he took care of you. And he gave you good money, and he gave you protection, and he brought you food or medicine or things like that. But he also got himself in trouble a number of times for, you know, abduction, torture, murder, because he didn't really understand farming. And probably the most famous one that he got away with was Grover Parks, who he abducted in Cairo. So imagine Cairo. Here comes this guy in a truck filled with barrels of applejack, and Legs Diamond sees it and assumes that there's some big competition going on. In truth, Grover Parks is just moving the Applejack from farm to farm. Maybe he's making a few deliveries, but it's not this huge empire that Webbs imagines. And he abducts and tortures and nearly kills Grover Parks. So what ends up happening is the Department of Justice, prior to the FBI, but still led by J. Edgar Hoover, in 1930, puts out a $6,000 reward for Legs Diamond's arrest. Ultimately, Legs is put on trial. He's held in Albany. He's tried in Troy. He survived two murder attempts. He'd been shot almost 10 times. And while under 24-hour police protection, is somehow shot three times in the head and dies.
And where was he killed?
He was killed in the hotel room in Albany under police protection. I strongly recommend the great New York writer William Kennedy for his book called Legs. It's about Legs Diamond.
Yes, that's a must-read book for anyone interested in the history of the area, and it's certainly true to both life and myth. And living in Round Top, I've often heard stories about Legs Diamond from people who had family members who actually knew him back in the day. The other two books in what's considered William Kennedy's Albany cycle are Billy Phelan's Greatest Game, which is the story of a poker player, a pool hustler, and a small-time bookie, and then the novel Ironweed, which is set in the Great Depression and was later made into a film starring Meryl Streep and Jack Nicholson. I highly recommend reading this Albany trilogy. So Seth, once again, thank you for sharing your knowledge about Hudson and beyond and for peeling away more layers to the story.
Absolutely.
Thanks for tuning in to Hudson Valley Word of Mouth. If you're interested in checking out an ongoing list of local recommendations, or if you have recommendations of your own to share, go to my Instagram at roundtoprecommends or visit the Wave Farm website at wavefarm.org for the Hudson Valley Word of Mouth segment archives and how to reach me. Talk to you next time.